And who better to talk coaching? The man who is most outstanding at it throughout his time in the game of the AFL, and these days just dominating at local level as well. Although, as we know, not a lot of local sport going on in 2020. I wonder how he feels about that anyway. Rocket Ed is his name, and Rocket joins us again on a Tuesday. Good morning, Rodney.
Hello, Daniel. How are you? Hello, Whitey. How are you, mate? All right?
I'm good.
Very good.
What are you doing with yourself, Rocket? You've been coaching in winter playing footy in winter for decades. How are you going without that these days?
Yeah, like everyone, it's a bit new to the system, isn't it? You get your footy fix, you watch the AFL and turn a few games off at various stages and try and find a game that has got some interest to you. So, it's a little bit new. I think everybody, there's not much to do, especially at lockdown again. It's a bit of groundhog day and every day's a Sunday.
Yeah, that's true. You haven't taken up cooking or anything, have you, Rocket?
No, my wife is trying to get me to take up cooking, but I like tasting the results of the cooking, but not about doing it myself.
Get involved, Rocket. Get involved. Get in the kitchen.
I should. Yeah,
Start stirring something. Put something in a bowl. Liberating. You'll love it. And it'll give you a chance to think about what's happening in the world of footy through the coaching lens. And we were talking earlier this morning, Rocket, about one of the most fascinating conversation pieces we've had in a while, I reckon, considering the stoush between Damien Hardwick and John Longmire and post-game comments and the emotion of that all and then the realisation of what you said, the apology. But it's out there and you've got to back it up and face another press conference about it every time for the rest of the week. How do you go about this?
Yes, it's you can tell, you know, having looked through that press conference again, that the way I interpret that Damien didn't mean or wasn't going into that press conference to criticise John or the Swans, but it just kept going, I suppose, with the questions. You virtually saying, well, it wasn't us and we had 75,000 people in our forward 50, so it was a bit of that emotion that spilled out. I didn't think there was a lot of venom with it or something. It just spilled out, but John didn't take well to it, and as John said, he was always going to get asked about it, so it became a story once, and John was going to defend himself or defend the Swans, so it is where it is at the moment. But yeah, I suppose some people like it. I suppose in today of them being guilty of myself, you give basic answers and give a bland of vanilla, but it's probably good at the moment that people speak their mind and it was true.
Just before we get too deep into this, for those playing at home that haven't heard the conversation, Damien Hardwick, as Rock had said, I was talking about the start of the game on Sunday, the Richmond-Sydney clash, which was a very dour affair. John Longmire responded to Dimmer's conversations post-match yesterday when he hosted the press conference in Sydney.
I mean, the comments after the game from Damien were completely unnecessary and unwarranted. They just weren't correct. And we didn't play an extra defender. Richmond bring a player up around the ball. They've been doing it for a long time. We just held our six defenders in place. If Damien didn't want to do that, he could have brought his forward back in and just played 6-6-6, and the issue would have been done. I'm not sure it's my role to walk up to Damien's coach's box, knock on the door and say, what would you like us to do? So that's how it happened.
So whilst he was quite calm and measured and controlled there, the big horse, Rocket, there was definitely an air of frustration, and I can't believe I'm having to say this without having to say that yesterday at the press conference. Is there an unwritten... He was talking about an unwritten... No, he wasn't talking about it. The media were on the back of it. An unwritten code of between coaches that you don't bag each other or bag each other's systems? Is that a conversation that's had at that famous dinner at Gill's every now and then?
No, it's not a conversation that's had, but... I think as coaches you know how difficult the job is and how things can change week to week, and it's by opening up that can of worms, you know, it can come back to bite you on the backside at some stage. It's a bit like criticising a team or a player saying something about, I suppose, Riley saying something about Nick Nat. You know, it's going to bite you on the bum, but by saying it, it's best to keep your counsel and just be quiet about it. But So yeah, John's taken it as a criticism. I mean, John was right in parts of his answer, but his parts of his answer were wrong as well. But I don't blame... I got an interesting angle. It's a bit of the discussion we had last week and it's been going on. I don't think you can... The word blame is for coaches. Coaches are doing what they can to either stay in the game, don't get beaten by plenty, which obviously with Swans with injuries, and or give them a chance to win. That's their job. Their job is not to make the game attractive. And I think John did what he did because it was 3-0. It was in the wet. Oh, okay. And we got an injury to Joey Kennedy. And at that stage, he was injured and came back on. Well, we've got to do something here that we're going to get blown out of the water. So it's a bit of the rope-a-dope, I suppose. They've stayed in the game, kicked a late goal to get them back within 7 or 8 points or 9 points. Okay, there's a chance here, but so I don't blame John, but it was a pretty, as you said, a nice word, Daniel would do her affair. It was a pretty ugly affair, to be honest. And but I think we've got to, like any discussion. If we're going to change the game or change the rules, coaches shouldn't be involved in it because they've got a vested interest and they're going to do what they can in a game and within a game and from week to week to actually try and win the game.
I want to go a little bit of a different way with this discussion. And I want to ask you, Rocket, when you were at Sydney, was there any feeling of any pressure to play an entertaining brand of football because of the market you were in?
Not that I can take off, no. I think we're fortunate because we flooded in 96 for first year, and because it was probably new, it caught teams off guard a bit and we're able to open it up. So we actually played quite attractive footy for most of the time because the big fella was in the goal square and kicked 130 or whatever he did. So it was once teams started to work out how to not negate that, but not get scored against heavily. They end up getting games 12 goals 11 or 11 goals to 10 type situation. And the game evolved and changed. But there was no pressure from within, no. No. Again, I think 96, no, there was some 97, 98, there was probably some good footy played, but it was more, again, about winning. Everyone loves winners, so it's about winning games.
So while we're there, Rocket, I'm glad you brought that up. So you... initiated the flood, so you know all about congestion. It was your fault. But you said you still had the big fella, Tony Lockett, up forward, who kicked a massive bag of goals. How did you score? What was your philosophy and your mode to score? Because what we're seeing at the moment is a lot of numbers back inside a 50, the forward 50, defensive 50, from your perspective, would have been defensive 50, flooding that area of the ground to stop getting scored against. But you're able to score, and Tony Lockett still had that big power forward, still had a presence in the game. How did you do it? What was the plan?
Oh, it was a bit like today, but the opposition didn't have the defensive system behind the ball, the structure behind the ball to be able to stop your quick ball movement out, you know, the shotgun out of defence. So, and their mode of going inside 50, they hadn't practiced a lot or didn't know about it, so they'd maybe kick it long or try an option that wasn't on. When that today they're so well versed in it, like Richmond would kick the ball off Sydney. And if it hadn't been wet, I would have thought Richmond would have scored a lot more. It was just a wet day. So in those days, it was just open up and it's just held for leather, and you'd have Tony in the goal square and you'd probably have another forward or two, but some of the other forwards would just push up the ground and be able to block some space.
The reason I asked the question about the pressure to play attractive football was the market of Sydney and, you know, playing an entertaining brand of football that people would want to go and watch. Because I would argue to both of you that Sydney have not been an attractive team to watch play football for a long time. They struggle to win at home. They're getting these really dour affairs where they almost invite forward 50 entries from the opposition and just get involved in these really dour affairs. And I just wonder now, Rocket, with Josh Kennedy out for 8 weeks, Isaac Heaney out for the season, does John Longmire need to perhaps play a different brand of football and not worry so much about the results? Because they've just lost their two best players, and Lance Franklin hasn't played for a long time. And just try and get these younger players playing a different brand of football and they'll pick up a couple of good draft picks and go again next year? Or is that just not in John Longmire's thoughts at all? Yeah, or DNA, yeah.
It's a good point. Even with last year, they sort of middle of COVID, when they were going okay with Franklin there, they were very similar. They had to get numbers back. They're probably the one team in the competition that defends the back 50. Most other teams try and defend the forward 50. So they've always had the loose man. They always like the player drop off at a contest, as John said. But I don't think that caused the problem at the weekend. It was just while the ball was in movement that they got numbers back. So that's what they've loved to do. The SCG helps that, suits that, because of the length of the ground or lack of length. I think with their best players out, if they play a different way, they'll probably get blown off the park. So that's going to be the conundrum about that. Do they, the results get blown out trying to teach younger players a new way? I've got a feeling that they'll go the way they're going to stay in contests. Because if they get blown off the park, having said that, they're not playing at home that much, or there's no crowds, but that's my feeling. Do they play a different way? Will they get pressure to play a different way? I don't think so. I think it's ingrained there. He's had good success over a period of time. He'll be able to debate that, discuss that, and teach the younger players the system that he wants to have. So, but it'll be interesting to see. I think with their players out, I think they're really going to struggle. As we know, they're going to struggle, aren't they? So it'll be about staying in the contest. That's a coach's fallback. You know, you don't want to get blown off the park. You don't want to get beaten by 10 goals every week. They'll probably get beaten by 3 or 4 goals and cop that.
What do you think, Half? I mean, we spoke to David Teague yesterday, and he's talking about, you know, getting the players to feel good about themselves, getting them to be confident to play a positive brand of football, take the game on, and they seem, Carlton, a relatively young team, seem to be really embracing that. Does John Longmire, because they've got a really good group of young players, that it's all about the future for them, does he have to think about perhaps changing it up a little bit and doing something different because they can? Because I think now the pressure's off them that they can't get much out of this season when their three best players are hardly having an impact at all with Kennedy, Heaney and throw-in Franklin.
Well, the problem with that is that if that's not going to be your long-term goal, there's not much point doing it for a short term, a 10-week period.
He might stumble across, oh, hey, this is actually working for us. We might have to try it differently.
Yeah, well, that's true, but it's seemingly, Rocket talked about his DNA before, seemingly that's not in the way that John Longmire coaches. That's not his DNA. He's got a strong belief system in another way of playing footy with that real contested method and folding back behind the ball and trying to slingshot and get them some speed on the ball that way. That seems to be his DNA as a coach. And from what we've seen through all of his time, since he's taken over the reins from Paul Roos, there hasn't been a lot of change about that. So
no, there haven't, but it hasn't been. But it hasn't
maybe
been.
This is a window, but if you're not going to do it long term, you wouldn't do it for 10 weeks.
Yeah. I mean, they've been poor team to watch for a while. They're not. You don't get excited about watching Sydney play.
No. And I think, as Half said, and I've said that it's in his DNA, that's his belief system. That's the way he thinks the game should be played. That'll be further cemented with lack of talent. I think the way you're saying, you probably go, okay, we've got players who can take the game on. And even with Franklin and Heaney, that they weren't doing. But they'll probably need some more.
Yeah.
So I can't see them doing that. So it'll be more of the same. So the result of playing that way, if you're not successful, that's when you open yourself up for criticism, as in supporters and as in media. If you win games, well, that's the be all and end all. Then people don't really mention it. They say, well, at least we've got to win, and we move on to next week. But when the losses start racking up or ugly affairs, that's when teams open themselves up for criticism.
Andrew Demetriou rang Paul Roos last night and said, this is your fault, mate. I'm not really happening. By the way, Charlie Gardner is going to join us in about 15 minutes' time as well, Whitey, the footy manager of the Swans, to talk about those key injuries to Kennedy and Heaney and the Franklin situation and all about what's happening up there in Sydney in the last couple of days as well. Let's move on to the Hawks. Clarko, Rocket, because Clarko was topic of the agenda yesterday, top of the agenda, talking about whether or not he's the right man. Jordan Lewis was posing, didn't say that he wasn't the right man, but was posing a question about whether or not he has the energy to see another build at the Hawks. They were clearly woeful on Friday night, and that's the origin of the conversation of all of this. Clarko's committed to the club for another couple of years. He knows what he's in for, doesn't he, going forward with the Hawks? Is this just a phase of the redevelopment of the Hawthorn Footy Club?
Well, I don't think it's a phase of redevelopment. The way I read it is the last few years, including this year, is have a tilt at it. So we all know at some stage, and I imagine internally, that they're going to fall off a cliff, as in with age and players that they'll lose. And we know that there's some holes in their list, like every team. The way I interpret Jordan Lewis's comment was, and I think you mentioned it, is has he got the energy for a rebuild? He's the best coach. So to me, Jordan Lewis is saying he's the best coach for it. If he's got the energy, well, great. If he hasn't, this may be an option. And that's going to be up to Alistair. Like, he's got the job as long as he wants it there. And he'll talk to internally, but I think there'll be some internal discussion at the end of the season. Okay, we need to go back and rebuild. Now, Alice has done that already, now when he first got the job. So there was 2 or 3 years of some pain and some slow build, and they got some good draft picks and they got some really good players in, and they're able to develop a very good side. Now, he can do that. What they've decided to do over the last 5, 6 years with a great deal of success is get players in from other clubs. And they've got a lot of players from other clubs. I don't know how many, it's more than half the side. Players that have come from another club, which is unusual for teams to do that, but there's no criticism of that. But they'll have to go back to the draft. They'll have to go because at some stage, and we know it's coming, that's going to bite them on the backside, and they'll edge down towards the bottom.
So, Rocket, they're at the moment 3 wins, 3 losses. They've got Melbourne and Sydney over the next 2 weeks, so very easily they could be 5-3. With what you've seen from that team, are they a team that you think can compete, or are they a team that can't compete and this list build that they've got isn't working? Where do you sit on Hawthorn?
On the positive side, they've had a really tough draw. And to be 3-3, they've done really well to be 3-3 with a tough draw. In amongst those, even one of the wins against North Melbourne, but some of the losses, they've been exposed a little bit about where they're at as a team. So they've done really well, I think, at this stage. I think against the better sides at the pointy end of the season, I don't think they'll be in the top 4 or 6 teams in the competition. But they will be competitive because A, of Clarkson, but B, they have got some talent around that at times will be able to hurt some teams. But are they a threat? I suppose you were saying compete. Are they a threat for the premiership? I don't think they are. I don't think.
Is there anything
that
that's lacking?
Oh, I think they've got some real holes. I think their midfield's workmanlike, but I think we got exposed the other night with some speed and some agility. They can't put pressure on the opposition in that midfield. They themselves don't break a line. They're hard and tough. No, Amira and Mitchell and there's no real goal kicker, and their defenders, and they've always, except for Brian Lake and maybe Gibson, they've struggled in the air as defenders as a team even, and I think Alice has always wanted to get someone in to be able to do that. That's why he's trying McAvoy down there, because he's worried about the long ball, the high ball. So they've got some areas of concern, but there are a lot of teams have got that. They just need their better players to play well, collective, and their system of time to actually give themselves a chance. But they'll probably win the next 2 games, as you said. There's no doubt. So it'll be 5-3, and then it goes away, and people say, "Well, told you so." But it'll come back at some stage, and people know. Like it's not a criticism. That's just where their list is at the moment, and once, you know, if they work all together and work hard, which they do generally under Alistair, and he'll have a plan for each game, that they'll win games and probably can make the 8. But I don't think they'll threaten at the end of the season.
Half on Friday night, Hawthorn had 11 of their 22, so half their team had players coming from other clubs.
Yeah, they've got 15 on the list, I think. out of the 45 total, which includes rookies, 15 on the list. So as Rocket says, it's clearly a strategy, and you referenced it this morning, Whitey, that they don't want to bottom out, so they want to be able to acquire players that they think can help from other clubs, and they can continue their momentum that they've built over the last decade and a half. So that's the philosophy. And if it goes wrong, that's when the criticism comes, because they can't maintain that level by throwing away draft picks, by acquiring other players, from good players from other clubs, and it doesn't work. That's when the criticism comes. It's not seen to be, and again, you referenced this morning, it's not seen to be, Rocket, the conventional way to build a list. It's not. The draft has always been the way, and they're trying to, along with a team like Geelong, I suppose, to a degree, trying to buck that trend with player acquisitions as the way to stay competitive.
Yeah, and I think you can do both. You know, you cherry pick some holes, and you can't be critical of Hawthorn's method or Alistair Clarkson doing it, because it's got them premierships and they got a top four the other year, which is probably against what people expected. So they've been thereabouts to give themselves an opportunity. But you know at some stage that it's going to go the other way. I don't know how many players. They've got 8 or 9 over 29 years of age. Eventually they're going to go. If not, you can name probably 4 or 5 next year. Who might struggle. So that's going to put a hole in their team, isn't it? So they're all of a sudden going to have to play, you know, some younger players at the same time. But they have developed some young players. Like Warple's been a really good player at a pick 30-odd. Day's obviously a first-rounder. But some other ones that they've brought in look okay. But I don't think they're going to have the top-end talent. Well, they're not going to, because they haven't had the draft picks. So at some stage, it's going to transition the other way. But when that comes, you know, they've probably held on longer than what most people have thought.
Pick 45, James Warple, best and fairest winner last year. A bit off his tucker at the moment, like his teammates,
yeah,
must be said.
Yeah, it hasn't. But they haven't got a lot of speed, except for Smith. They haven't got a lot of speed in their side on ball movement. And the way they move the ball is very measured now. And I think some other ex-Hawthorn people were critical of the lack of dare and whatever. But I think it's a method that's served them well the last couple of years to be able to score. And I think the North Melbourne game was a real example of that, when they got themselves 30 points up. But once there was speed on the game, they actually gave North a chance, except for Smith. So you talk about tagging or who you're going to target. At Hawthorn, you just go after Smith. You don't tag Amira or Mitchell or whatever. Smith's the one, because he's the one that can carry. He's the one that can give him metres gained. Mitchell having 40 or 50 will hurt you, you know, by actually dishing the ball out. But he needs to give that to a Smith type to be able to have some effect of going forward. So I think Isaac will probably be in for a tough trot over the next few weeks.
We'll have a chat to him after 8 o'clock. We'll throw that at him and see what he says about that. So Hawthorn and Geelong, to a degree, have been criticised for the way they've played and the ball movement strategies of those two teams. Chris Scott comes under enormous scrutiny for that. And then you see the other end of the ladder and the teams emerging right at the moment, Rocket. We're seeing Gold Coast being quite dynamic. Then we saw Carlton on the weekend and St Kilda in that first quarter. They blew a 6-goal lead, which was quite unusual. But their method seems to be quite aggressive. Can you do that when you haven't got expectation, Rocket?
Yes, that all helps. I always go back, and yeah, you can. Once the criticism comes, it's interesting, or we need to change. The biggest indication with me, and it's happened to the Giants and it's happened to other teams, was Ken Hinckley's first or second year at Port when they made the preliminary final. I can't remember what year it was, and they just lost to Collingwood, I think it was. And that year they played a real daring brand of footy. They changed it the next year. And they went more down the line. They were more circumspect. They didn't pull the trigger of corridor, go quick. I think they thought, well, we've got the basis of our game. We just need to modify us to go to the next step and maybe a turnover here or two. What an invail. They went back the other way on the ladder. They went down because they just didn't score enough. So sometimes you just got to say, well, okay, we've made mistakes or it's cost us a game, but it's still the way to go. It's still our number one wood. To me, the Giants are the biggest one. When Giants put speed on the game and they move the ball quickly, if you're in opposition, you worry about that. You get scared. What worries you about the Giants? The way the Giants are going at the moment doesn't worry you too much, because a bit more soon, so they go sideways, they go backwards, and we'll a bit more. And then when we've got an opportunity, we'll go, but they don't create that because there's turnovers, there's goals of the opposition. Then we get worried about that. Okay, let's, and most coaches do, we would rather the opposition not score a goal rather than us score a goal. So, but the Saints, it'd be interesting now with the Saints, that's twice it's happened now where they've had big leads and they've gone back the other way. Now, I didn't see the game, so I don't know whether it was through mistakes or through it was lack of concentration, lack, you know, they dropped their work rate, whatever the case may be. But does that go, it'd be an interesting conversation if that happens again. Do they modify their style because it's costing us a game or it's costing us goals? That'll be the internal debate that'll rage on, that we won't stay in the same style. So I'm interested to see what happens there.
Well, the Giants are fascinating. This dynamic ball movement team, some of the graphics last night on might have been the couch, the 17th best team at getting the ball from defensive 50 to forward 50 this year. Like the second worst team in the comp, which you would never have thought watching the Giants play of recent times, and have come off a grand final and just start to think, again, back to my initial point, Rocket, about expectation. Do you start to alter and play a bit safer because of the expectation that falls upon you as opposed to just playing the brand that's got you that position?
Yeah. And I think I've mentioned quite a bit about the Giants in the past, but round one, I know it's a long time ago, but against Geelong, which is a great game, Geelong kept the speed on the game as well. Yep. The Giants played terrific and won by 20-odd points. It was a really good game. And then they lost to North Melbourne by being a real conservative, didn't take the game on up there, and you go, what are you doing? It's just completely... this other style has got you a win, and teams worry about the Giants' skill level and their running ability, and they play into the opposition hands by going kick mark, stop, go sideways, don't take risks, go down the line, and keeps other teams in the game. And it's... that's what the coaches choose at that time. But the Giants, if they get the speed on, I think they can win it.
I reckon they're the ones that are escaping the criticism at the moment. I mean, they've lost to the Bulldogs, North Melbourne and Port Adelaide. You'd bank all of those three as wins based on the quality of their list. They don't have major injury issues. Outside Tim Taranto, they're pretty much all intact. I reckon they're the ones that are escaping the attention. For a team that are 3-3, the same as Hawthorn, the Giants played in the grand final last year, and they're just not the team that we thought they'd be because of the way they're playing.
Not. Yeah, and if you take round one out, which they were, their exposed form of the last 5 weeks has been quite disappointing, to be honest. And at parts on the weekend, they looked okay, but I've never seen them make as many mistakes as they make. Mm. So that's not the speed of the ball in the game. So it's different to their method. It's just mistakes seemed like carefree mistakes, kicking the ball on the ground and missing targets by plenty. I know it's a bit slippery on the Gold Coast at times. Can get a bit dewy or it can get a bit humid and the ball gets a bit greasy. But some of the mistakes they're making, and both teams are making them, but some of the mistakes that the Giants were making were certainly uncharacteristic.
We will put them on our Coach's Corner watch list, the Giants, as we move forward through the AFL season. Rocket, always great to chat footy with you on a Tuesday. We appreciate it. Look forward to doing it again next week.
Thanks, guys. Look forward to talking again next week. See you, boys.
Good stuff.